Hey, this is Annie Spong, Intimacy Coordinator. Welcome to Romancing the Screen. We are so excited today to have our guest, director Brenna Malloy. She has some incredible credits under her belt: Law and Order, Lone Star, 911, Chicago Fire. She's just such an incredible human and collaborative being. I had the pleasure of intimacy coordinating on several of her projects over the last couple years, and each time it's been such a genesis of inclusion and collaboration, and I am so honored to bring her to the show and hear her point of view of intimacy coordinating and how we intersect, support, and enhance the process of filmmaking. So welcome, Brenna Malloy. We can't wait to hear from you, and thank you so much for being with us. Welcome to Romancing the Screen, bearing it all with intimacy coordinators, actors, and crew. I'm Annie.
And I'm Catherine.
And we're here to share with you our experience as this, you know, new field unfolds. And today we have the extraordinary guest, director Brenna Malloy. And I'm so excited to have this conversation because working in collaboration with you is such a joy. And I'm really excited to hear what your experience was just coming into working with an intimacy coordinator, what your preconceptions might have been, and what your apprehensions or fears was versus what it actually was.
Well, happy to be here. Hello. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to chat with you because I, too, have enjoyed working with both of you so much. So
thank you.
This is great. So the first part of your question, what was I expecting? You know, we worked together. Was that 2 years ago, Annie?
It was probably something like that.
Thereabouts. So before you and I worked together, I had not had the pleasure of working with an intimacy coordinator. I did not know what to expect. I had heard varying things from other directors and actors, some good, some bad, about the experience. So I sort of went in with an open mind, but also, to be honest, with the question of why do we need this? Not because I didn't think the actor should be protected and all of us be protected throughout this scene, but I had just not had this experience before and I had done similar scenes and they went great and I did all the work necessary or I thought necessary to make the actors comfortable. But I really learned through working with you kind of the gift of having a collaboration like this, because just from our first phone call, one of the things you said was, I'm here to, you know, help bring your vision to life. And I very quickly learned that this dynamic is not too different than the dynamic with a stunt coordinator, where I can talk sort of overall vision, and then you can use your own creativity to help bring that to life, while also doing work that I couldn't do myself before, which is talking to costumes and spending extra time talking to every department necessary, and ultimately being there in whatever way the actors need to do the work. So that was my first experience. Tell me how I did there and what else I didn't answer from your first question.
No, I think that's amazing, Brenna, to just to bring to life what had been in the field of production and, you know, putting together productions with this new industry sort of landing with a lot of press, both positive and negative, and wondering, okay, how does this integrate and where do we intersect? And then having the experience of someone coming to the space and being collaborative and actually, you know, supporting your vision right out of the gate and having that be the primary focus. Like, how do I support you and create a space for consent and safety for the actors and the crew? so that we actually can land on set and there's transparency about what we're up to.
Absolutely. The transparency is a big part of my process in general, not just about intimate scenes. So to bring that into this work has been a great experience. I mean, you know me, you've seen my prep. I have a lot of things to show people before we get to set. And being able to loop in you and for you to point out any potential red flags that are going to be an issue for, you know, whatever reason before we get to set and solve those. That way on set, I could give all of the time we have to making the scene as good as possible and not, you know, sacrificing 45 minutes to something that could have been solved the day before or the week before. So I really hope that this dynamic of an intimacy coordinator and a director and an actor working together so well the way we have, you know, many times will continue to grow, you know, throughout my career and obviously the rest of the industry.
Beautiful. Great answer to that. The other questions I was sort of pondering about, and we have talked about within the industry of intimacy coordinators, where directors feel like intimacy is. Like, what is intimacy? Is it just a physical experience? You know, where do you see this parameters? Because I think the first time you and I worked together, there was no simulated sex. It was just, it was a nude, partially nude person in the frame.
Right.
And, you know, so there's a lot of conversation about what nudity is, what intimacy is, where, and then very little clear delineation of how you navigate that.
I don't know what the proper answer is in terms of, you know, the industry standard or, you know, SAG-AFTRA rules. But my instinct as a director is to ask the actor if this scene is intimate enough. And you know what? If we have to ask that question, it probably is intimate enough, because that's a question that really you should be asking the actor and not myself as the director. That's what I've had to learn. And thankfully, you taught me so gracefully. It's like, even though I feel very equal to everyone I work with, being in a position of power as the director, I do have to keep in mind that when I ask questions, however innocently, I am coming from a position of power. So, you know, that's kind of my roundabout answer of saying I don't think it's a uniform solution. I think it's actor dependent, scene dependent. And you tell me how incorrect that is.
No, that's a beautiful, sorry, Catherine. It's a beautiful answer, and it's right on point with a lot of the conversations we've been having, that, and recognizing that previously and still to this day, very often it's like the conversation is, we'll ask the actor, we will ask the actor. I'm like, well, who's we? Who's asking, the producer or the director? Who's asking? Because there's no way for them to really address that without feeling some power dynamic.
Right.
There's something that I really loved that you said, that you were talking about, like, knowing your sort of power as a director. And I was wondering, like, I have sometimes noticed working with women directors that because the way we're kind of socialized, you know, you're not really socialized to see yourself as powerful, that sometimes it is hard for women, once they're in positions of powers, to see themselves as someone who could potentially be harmful. Did you find that to be like kind of a bit of a head adjustment, or was that like pretty easy for you to just kind of roll in and be like, no, this is where I am. I need to make sure I'm taking care of other people.
It wasn't a difficult, you know, thing to wrap my head around. I hadn't thought of it until Annie said, well, you shouldn't ask that question because you're the director. They're going to want to say yes to you. And it's a good reminder, and this is why I like surrounding myself by people who are so smart and caring, because that's what I needed to hear. And even though I always want to create a safe space for the actors and everyone, sometimes it can't come from me, the questions or the check-ins, because of my position. And so I've I adapted pretty quickly once I realized the importance of, you know, not accidentally pressuring someone into saying yes to something. And like, you know, working with a stunt coordinator, I really lean on the intimacy coordinator to be the one to guide me of what's possible, what's not possible, what's safe, what's not safe. And I've really kind of just like slipped into that very similar dynamic I have with a stunt coordinator.
That's great. It's great. And that was my experience, that you, that your level of willingness and collaboration was just so easy to digest. And you got it right away that like, oh, right, I stand in a different space than the actors, and they are going to want to please me and say yes. That is just the way this goes. And so opening it up for transparency and consent to happen outside of that space, with them having the full acknowledgement of what the vision was, and am I comfortable doing that? You know, or how do we do it that does feel comfortable? So it's really beautiful.
Thank you. I always am trying to improve and get better every day, like every artist is. But I've noticed that there is so much strength in just communicating what you want to the proper people, especially on a big TV show, and then just having them tell you what is and is not possible. I think perhaps on a feature film it would be different, but certainly in television, I don't struggle saying things ahead of time because I've learned the value of being specific ahead of time and knowing before we get there what is going to be impossible to pull off. And I'm also thinking, Annie, I don't know if I mentioned this, but one of the, you know, what I would consider the most intimate scenes I've ever directed, I did before working with an intimacy coordinator, and it went great. The scene turned out great. The actors both expressed how comfortable they were, but it took so much work for me to do the job that you do. And I wasn't doing it, you know, half as good as you do it in terms of all the work you do behind the scenes that I don't even see. And so I went into this experience skeptical of like, oh, why can't I do that? You know, I've done it in the past. Why don't I have the ability to keep doing it? And it's just another reminder that is so good for a director to have, which is sometimes the smartest move you can make is to give up power or to give up micromanaging something, and then you get something even better than what you expected.
I really love something you said, which is when you're talking about like have it, like the kind of like the power of having a specific vision and then finding out what's impossible. Because I don't know about you, Annie, but I have always found it is so much easier to work with a director who tells me what their vision is. And then if it's not possible, like we know, I feel like if you can explain what your vision is and what like what story we're telling with this intimate scene, then anything the actor isn't comfortable with or can't do for whatever reason, we all have a map on like what's the core artistic purpose. Like once everyone is glommed onto that, then I always feel like any sort of individual boundaries, discomforts are so easy to work around because we have like a North Star we're following versus something that's just like, well, it's a sex scene.
Right. Yeah. I think it all goes back to, you know, the truth that art thrives in boundaries. And so once you know what the boundaries are, you can be creative and find a solution that fits inside of that, you know, while also telling the story you need to tell.
Well, if you don't mind me asking, I would love to hear, okay, you've gotten hired for a show, you get a script, there's a sex scene. I feel like sex scenes are often quite underwritten in television scripts. Sometimes it is just like they have sex. How do you approach that like artistically? Like you get that kind of one sentence and then you have to turn it into like a vision. How do you approach that? I'm really curious.
It all starts with what is this scene about for me? And it really is the same way I look at action sequences. Like what changes? What is this scene about? How is the character different at the end of the scene compared to how they were at the beginning? How is the story different at the end of the scene? How does this set us up for the next story turn? That's the place where I start what is this about? And then say it is only, you know, one sentence or an eighth of a page, you know, that doesn't describe the choreography. I talk to the writer first. What is the tone of this scene? Who has the power here? Is it equal? Is this fun? Is this upbeat? Is this serious? And I really get a lot of those descriptors from talking to the writer or the showrunner. And then I talk to intimacy coordinator and communicate those things. Perhaps we come up with some choreography together of possibilities. We land on something that feels right for the story, and then it's time to present it to the actors, and the intimacy coordinator takes it from there. So very similar to working with a stunt coordinator. I know I keep going back to that, but I have the same dynamic where it might be an eighth of a page. They run, you know, he chases them through the parking structure. I mean, that could be an entire day's worth of shooting if we wanted it to be. So coming up with choreography and then going from there to prep it.
Yeah, I think that we have all made that connection and the parallel between stunt coordinating and intimacy coordinating as an analogy of two areas where you create safety and consent and also some potentially some choreography if that's warranted and asked for. So that is, for us, has been a really good touchstone in how to describe what we do or the ways in which we work. Something that we touched on before was, you know, and you mentioned it as you're reading a script, where do you flesh out? Like, that's where I begin to flesh out when I'm hired for the season of a show and I'm reading the scripts. I too would go back to the writer or the showrunner and say, tell me about these scenes. So, and get very clear, just as you described before, and then speak with, you know, if it wasn't you, then the writer and the showrunner about that. And more we are finding that perhaps in shows that have extensive intimacy and physical contact and simulated sex, is there a place and a purpose for having us in the space through casting? So that as you're casting actors that are going to be in these scenes, maybe 5 episodes in, they become involved in simulated sex or some sort of relationship in the show that didn't exist episode one. But that needs to, you want to have alignment and transparency for that, for when you get to episode 4, 5, or 6, to have that transparency and consent to move forward. And we, a number of times, shows have done it the opposite and really been met with a lot of conflict as to why I can't convince the actor they would be okay in episode 8 to have simulated sex when we're now in episode 1. And, you know, my position is that is not something they're comfortable with. You know, that was, I had the conversation and it was a no. And like having a showrunner experience that and have to recast was really not what they wanted to do. So it was really interesting, you know, as we kind of explore this more and more, like, where do we support your vision and help navigate this for the whole process?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. You know, as a director who goes from show to show to show, I'm not there when those conversations are happening about, oh, we're going to cast this person for 7 episodes, you know, it's going to be talking for 5 episodes and then we're going to have a sex scene in episode 6. Like, I have stepped into a situation, not that extreme, where someone was cast for something and then they're asked to do something, you know, that wasn't in the casting breakdown. I think it requires flexibility on the show's part, where I, you know, my mindset as a director is everyone does their best work when they're relaxed and comfortable. And so it's my job to create the most relaxed and comfortable environment for people to do their best work in. So that would be a tough position to be in as a guest director, because I have no say in the casting of this person. But I would do everything I could to make them feel comfortable and to help reach a compromise between the showrunner's vision and what the actor, you know, feels comfortable doing, obviously, while working with the intimacy coordinator.
To me, I actually think this often comes back to a script problem, where I do, like, I teach classes on how to write sex scenes, and most of it is actually based on how, because I think a lot of writers, you don't want to pitch out a sex scene in the room. Like, that's very awkward and embarrassing. And so I feel like the buck eternally gets passed, where it's like, okay, we're going to be really, really vague about what's happening. Like, I worked on a scene that had a lot of problems because it was just written as they go at it.
Very specific.
And that made it through so many rounds. And it made it to a guest director who thought it was, I think I've told this story before, they thought it was a full sex scene, like a full naked sex scene. And the actor who had gotten the role thought it was like a clothed makeout. And like, by the time the director stepped on, it was kind of too late. Like, because like, casting didn't get the information they actually needed from the director, from the showrunner or the writers. So to me, part of transparency, I think so many problems that happen on set come from people being too embarrassed to have a vision for these scenes. So if you are a writer and this is your scene, you need to write a scene that actually gives casting and the actor, like, accepting the scene, an understanding of what they're agreeing to. And I think there's like this idea that you just pass it on to the director, but by then it's often too late for the director to do work, to do that work. Cause you're right. It's often already cast. Like, directors step in, guest directors step in very last minute.
Right. Yeah. It's tough. I have been in that situation where I get a script and it has not been beaded out, probably because of fear of embarrassment on the writer's part. Thankfully, my fear of embarrassment has been killed through directing, you know, 25 episodes of TV. I'm used to being embarrassed publicly. So I don't have an issue trying to get specific in front of a group of people in order to make the work good, because I've already been thoroughly embarrassed any way possible through the job I have.
Also, I will say, I always feel so bad for casting, because people will tell them things and then never update them. Like, I worked on this one show where the casting had been told there was going to be no sex or nudity, and then they changed the character into someone who, like, kind of performed sex and nudity for work and never updated casting. So then they cast someone being like, there's no sex, there's no nudity, and it was completely not true. She got the scripts and like quit the next day and felt very hoodwinked, when I don't think it was necessarily malicious. I think it was incredibly poor communication.
I've seen that in a different way. I've seen casting kind of be the last to know when a change is happening or a new wrinkle occurs. And then they're scrambling to call the agent to see if the actor will do this or that. It's tough, you know. It's also just part of the pace of television. It's really hard to communicate everything to everyone all the time. It's tough.
No, I'm glad that you said that, because I actually think in my experience, when things go wrong on set in sex scenes, most of the time it is not malicious. It's because people move very, very fast. These are very, very sensitive issues. And it's embarrassing to talk about sex. So things that already happen on set, which is people not communicating enough, just get exacerbated. Has that sort of been, I know you sound like you are someone who's very careful about these and you always have taken your time. I had a really wonderful experience working on one of your sets. But have you found that you have to slow down a little bit as much as you can when it comes to intimate scenes?
I have found I can't slow down for anything at all except safety. And I include intimate work in that. You know, I have to move at a very fast pace, or else we won't make our day and I'll get fired and, you know, never work again. So I'm moving at a fast pace in everything I do. But when it comes to making something safe, I really do not, have that same approach. So stunts and intimate work, even emotional work on an actor's part that is not intimate, I slow down for. And that's part of the reason I go fast doing everything else, is so I can take time where we really need it and make people feel like they aren't rushed for that kind of work.
Yeah, that's one of the things I very much appreciate about working with you, Brenna, is your attention to detail and your prep make going into a set really easy, in the sense that the communication has been there. People feel seen and heard. They seem to have what they need. And there is enough consideration for how are we with this? Is everything moving the way we thought it would? There's not an assumption that things are happening. There's actually a conversation. So I think that makes a huge difference.
Thank you. I'm glad it's helped, because all that prep I do robs me of having a personal life, but it definitely makes the day go a little smoother at work. And also, like, on the last job we worked together on, Annie, it's the first time I've shared that with an actor, shared my prep. And not that I'm trying to keep anything from the actors, I just don't share shot lists or storyboards because I don't want to sort of, you know, have them be thinking too technical about the work. But on this last job, I did share with our number one, and it was an entirely different experience. And it sort of made me question, like, oh, should I, not just for intimate or action work, but in general, should I share more with the actors? And if it distracts them, they just don't have to look at it. So it's sort of been something on top of mind for me lately as a director, is like, how much should I share all this with everyone? And so far, I've discovered there's not one person I've shared it with who it hasn't helped do their job a little more smoothly, because they know what my plan is.
I loved that you shared that, because I feel like one thing that does come up quite a lot as we jump from director to director is whether directors are comfortable with actors watching any playback of themselves to make sure it looks like what we've agreed to. And I feel like a lot of actors don't want actors to watch playback ever because they feel like it affects the performance. And then some directors are very comfortable with it. So I feel like it is really interesting to hear you talk about, like, whether having actors be 100% in your process or sort of outside as, like, one piece, and you're trying to kind of keep them, like, the purity of the process for them. It's always really interesting to me to hear how directors think about actors, like how they collaborate with them.
Yeah, I come from a place of, like, I learned acting before I learned directing. So it's something I identify with. And, you know, actors are messengers. And I don't think anyone watches a show or a movie, you know, outside of our industry because of any department being good except for the writing and the acting. So I really try to prioritize performance, because that's what the audience is going to most connect with, is good acting of a good script. So I also try to come from a place of, what is their process? You know, in terms of playback, I've definitely worked with actors who cannot watch themselves, and I would never force them to. And I work with actors who want to watch themselves. I, until my last job, had never had playback on a show. So we had, a playback guy every day. You know, I did 4 episodes having playback for the first time. We used it a lot. And I wish every show I did could afford it, because it's amazing. I even had one actress who does not like watching herself, but she had a very specific stunt she had to pull off that was very challenging. And I was like, you gotta watch it. You did such a good job. And she watched it, and she was so happy she watched it, because she was so proud that she did pull it off.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, I am personally a big proponent of, I think sometimes our industry can kind of lean into treating actors like they have to be siloed very specifically in their own little corner and never, ever understand anything else that's happening outside of their process, which I understand why some directors act that way. But I have always enjoyed working on sets the most where it feels like the director and the actor are a true team, not like a puppet master and puppets, although, you know, people have different processes.
It's hard for a guest director to have that relationship with an actor. because they come and they go and the actor knows next week it's going to be a different director, and they guard themselves from bad directors. And so they don't let the good ones in. And I don't blame them for that at all. So I try to, I thankfully been asked back to, you know, multiple shows, and I get to develop stronger relationships with the actors I work with, which is great. But I'm always fighting the last bad director they worked with.
It's the same with, you know, our experience with intimacy coordination, because it's such a new industry and everybody's level of expertise and experience is so different, and their emotional intelligence and how they land on a set and their demeanor, how they collaborate with or not with a writer, producer, director, and the actors. So sometimes, you know, the first conversation can be gristly, and, you know, like you, you know, bracing for that, or just being open-minded and remembering, like, you know, I'm here to support your vision and I'm not here to interfere with anybody's process. So that for me has really helped bridge a lot of that sort of like, oh, I don't know, I've done this before, we didn't have one, it worked out okay, everyone said they were okay. And, but, you know, there's that power dynamic again, in there that, yes, of course they say they're okay. You know, there's no one else there that's asking. So for just, you know, looking forward, is there a way in your mind that we could be more useful, more helpful, more collaborative?
In my experience, it's been wonderful. You know, you two are the only intimacy coordinators I've yet to work with, and it's been a great experience. I have no notes. So, you know, I've heard horror stories of people not having good relationships with the intimacy coordinator. I think that could be for different reasons. I have not had that experience yet. And I think, Annie, your background, I imagine, has really helped you thrive in this job. You come from doing this for a long time in a different role, but in a role that really has served you well in this new role. So you're not having to catch up with the mindset, you know, of a set. You know what it's like, you know what's expected, and you also know when to push back, which I think, like, that's really, for any job in production, that's the hardest thing, is like, when do you put your foot down? And you only, in my experience, I only know through putting my foot down in the wrong moments that I know when to put my foot down in the right moments. So that's sort of been my lucky experience of you being the first one called. And then when you weren't available, Catherine, you being ready to go. So I've had, like, you know, 2 out of 2 great experiences.
That's great. And you're right. Yeah, thank you very much. We are, as a community, really trying to navigate what is essential to being very successful at this in all aspects, and being supportive as we can be to productions. And that comes with varying experience. And thank you for just indulging that.
I think what you guys are doing is just, that's how it's going to happen. It's just the more wonderful experiences people have with intimacy coordinators, the more it's going to spread. And, you know, every time I've been on a show and someone in the concept meeting asks, you know, is there going to be an intimacy coordinator? Every single time the unit production manager has said without pausing, yes, we will bring one in. You know, the last few years, it's been a really positive, yes, we're going to find room in the budget for this. It's worth it, from every, you know, production I've worked with.
Yeah, that's really lovely.
Any last thoughts? Any last questions, Catherine?
I would actually love to ask you just a creative question, which is, as a director, like, or as like a viewer, is there like an intimate scene that you particularly like, or you like remember making a real impression on you as like a student or like a filmmaker?
That's such a good question. I'm thinking of 2 scenes from very different movies. The first is Michael Bay's Pearl Harbor, a classic. If I highly recommend watching this movie, the director's cut of this movie, because it's the same movie, but, you know, the bombing sequence is 45 minutes longer. But anyway, the intimate scene between, I think it's Josh Hartnett's character and Kate Beckinsale's character. They get together in this, like, airplane hangar that has all of the parachutes hanging, like, you know, before they're folded. And I remember watching that. I think this was before I was even in film school and, like, kind of before I knew I wanted to be a director. And it's, like, a really great, sexy scene. But I also remember thinking, wow, like, what a great venue for a scene like this. And they're really using the set to help tell the story. Like, they would hide certain things behind the parachute, you know, and they'd hide the perfect, you know, moment or thing they didn't want to show, and then they'd expose something. And also it was like these characters were alone but in a very big space. That scene has kind of stuck with me as being visually like a really striking intimate scene. The other movie I'm thinking about is Carol, Todd Haynes' movie, Christmas movie. I love this movie so much. It's like every frame is like just a painting. But the intimate scene between Kate Blanchett and Rooney Mara, it's, to me, it's such a great, you know, expression of their characters. And also, it's not just a turning point because, oh, this is the sex scene in the movie now. It's like the act that changes their lives forever because, you know, the husband's hired someone to like take pictures of them, and those pictures are what, you know, are going to lead to her losing her daughter. And so just in terms of story, that one sticks out because it wasn't just, okay, act two, here's the sex scene. It really was like a pivotal story beat, and also done in such a beautiful way.
Oh, I love Carol. It's such a wonderful movie.
I love that movie too.
They're great things to go look at.
What are your favorites?
Mine is, did you guys ever watch Sense8?
I need to watch that.
It was like on Netflix probably a decade ago. They have a scene, I think in the fourth episode, where this sounds crazy to describe, but they have like a psychic orgy. And it really, really stuck out to me because I feel like when we watch orgies, they're almost always like an indicator of something being wrong with society. Like it's pretty much always like used as almost like a dehumanizing thing. Like the more people are involved in a sex scene, sort of like the less each person is like seen as a human. Like, you know, when you think of like Eyes Wide Shut, stuff like that, where it's like always sort of like showing that there's something wrong with the society. And this was a scene where it was like about these eight people having a psychic orgy, and it was filmed like so beautifully and so lovingly, as if this was like a shared, like communal experience in a way that I've never seen anything filmed like that. I thought it has always really, really stuck with me as a reminder that like the sort of tropes we use for sex scenes, we do because we've always done them. There are ways to think beyond that.
Cool. I'm gonna check that out. It's been on my list for a long time.
Yeah, I haven't seen that either, Catherine. The one that for me that sticks out the most, and it's very current, is Poor Things. And I love the writing and her character and how she navigates her sexuality and her sexual exploration in terms of just culture, you know, and just demystifying that her expression of, you know, wanting oral sex or whatever she is asking for is just so innocent and beautiful, rather than something secretive or like, I don't know, can I ask for that? Or I'll do this for you if you do that for me. There's no, like, this. No, this is what I would
this
like.
This is
that.
Perfect timing because I just got the screener today and I'm planning on watching it tonight.
Oh, you'll have to let me know what you think.
I will.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Brenna, thank you so much for your time. And, you know, I really so enjoy working with you and collaborating with you. And I'm really grateful to have you on.
Oh, thank you both so much. I'm really glad you're doing this podcast. And I'm excited for more great work together in the future.
Thank you. Is there any social media you'd like to plug or any projects coming up?
My Instagram is GoBrennaGo. I have a fun project that Annie worked on coming out on Amazon that I can talk about later this year. And yeah, maybe I'll circle back when it comes out.
Amazing. Well, thank you all for listening. You can find us on all social media platforms at Romancing the Screen Pod, or email us at romancingthescreenpod@gmail.com. Cut.